So, Ms. Malala, who you will be meeting throughout this evening. And I'm very excited, we're very excited to be here at Jacksonville. We have been to Casper, who's our short, we have been to Denver, Colorado, we've gone to Boston, we'll be in Jacksonville, going to all nine census regions, so we'll be in Tennessee, California, Iowa, Illinois, and Texas. So just so you folks are aware, you guys can follow us, and we are on social media, as I said. So, it's called, hashtag is fire2, the number 2, sir, and you can follow us on social media. So, as the Vice Chair of Military Service, I'm happy to be here. It's an honor for myself and the Commissioners to host an public meeting in Jacksonville, especially due to Military Appreciation. So, given that Jacksonville is a great military community, we've had the opportunity to talk to a number of MSOs and DSOs this afternoon, and learn a lot about the community of Jacksonville and all that we have to offer, so we appreciate the time that you have spent with us so far. And also for all of you who are here tonight, because we know that you've taken time out of your busy schedules and your evenings to be here with us, and we deeply appreciate it. So National Military Appreciation Month obviously is about showing recognition and appreciation to members of the military, our Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, and Coast Guard, and our reserve forces, and our National Guard. And I want to thank those who are serving today. If you can stand, I'd like to give you a round of appreciation for your service. We have three speakers with us tonight and an overview of the commission that my commissioner, colleague, Barney will provide to you here at the meeting today. But we want to begin our conversation tonight about the service. So on your chairs, you should have a card. I don't have a card. That you can, if you think about it, my commission is fellow commissioners are holding up a card. If you think about something later on this evening, or maybe you didn't want to talk about it, have a brilliant idea you want to share with us, you can write it down on the card and submit it this evening. Otherwise, you can also go to our website, which is www.inspireserve.gov, and also submit your comments there as well. So, I would like to kick off this meeting tonight to introduce Mr. Harrison Connors, our Military Veteran Affairs and Veteran Service Supervisor of the City of Jacksonville. Thank you for being here this evening. As the Supervisor of Military Affairs and Veterans Department, Mr. Connors serves as Deputy Strategic Advisor to the Director of Matters Related to Iraq, and serves as the City of Jacksonville's liaison with regional military-based leadership. Additionally, Mr. Connors supervises the Jacksonville Veterans Resource and Education Center and Homeless Veterans Community Mission Program staff. Mr. Connors coordinates funding and initiatives with the Jaguar Foundation, as well as corporate and community financial involvement that funds all departments and special events associated. Services Trust Fund. Mr. Connors also serves as representative to the Florida Defense Alliance, Florida Defense Support Task Force, the Chamber of Commerce Military Issues Committee, and the liaison with the United States Navy on base encroachment protection efforts with over 1,000 acres protected. That's a mouthful and a lot of responsibilities. So without further ado, Mr. Connors.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. Normally, I am not responsible for the traffic. I can tell you that when I got here, I saw the University Police standing out in the hallway, and I thought someone has called ahead. Other than what I have just done, trying to get here in an hour. we've had a fun afternoon. But thank you for being here. Thank you for all of you traveling to Jacksonville, welcome to Jacksonville, and for those from here. I appreciate you, citizens here. Again, the commission, my name is Harrison Connors, I'm supervisor over Military Affairs and Veterans Department, City of Jacksonville. On behalf of Mayor Curry, I want to thank you for being here for this. As we all be able to be better servant leaders in our communities and our age, So thank you for doing that and taking the time out to develop your skills and make the connections that you need to do that, especially with our Marines here. Thank you for being here. Just at the Memorial Wall today, something we have down next to the MREC field, the TIAA field now, it's the big football stadium. And I work with the Marines a lot on the Memorial Day service. They have that major Memorial Day. Jackson has the second largest Memorial Day service really in the nation, and the second largest Memorial Wall in the nation, next to the Vietnam Wall in D.C. And one of the neat things about that, I really always want to mention to our young people, is that that wall list of the 1,700 young men and women that passed away, residents of all parties, it's 4114. But it's listed by a school. So you have the opportunity back there, and you can see your school and see who's gone before you, who served before you to give you the freedoms that you enjoy. It's a really special experience. So if you're from Jacksonville, May 28th at 8 a.m., you'll have the Memorial Day service, and I pass the training here. So for that, but before you go out and go to the beach, you can hike off, spend an hour recognizing this and serve. So in my day-to-day job, I get to do a couple things. I get to lead a team of individuals that provide services to over 150,000 veterans in Duval County and over 50,000 active duty with this contract that they're here in that community. On a daily basis, we have to begin to help connect those individuals to the services that they earn as a result of their service. We also work very hard to make sure that the military service members that are here in Jacksonville and their families know how much we appreciate them, appreciate the service, and how much we want to be there to support them. And we want them to stay in Jacksonville when that service ends. We have about 3,000 people that get out of the service every single year that decide to stay in Jacksonville. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is our patriotic duty to do that, to take care of them, to make sure we know how much we appreciate them. But also, it's great for our community. We want those people in our churches, in our synagogues, in our little leagues, in our police athletic leagues, in our community. We want them as our next door neighbors because they help make the fabric of this community what it is. It's really one of the best places to live in the country. And there are really only 1% of Americans currently serve or have a needed family member that serve in the military. We live in a nation that's really been founded on some indelible freedoms. And I believe very strongly that when people, when they serve, they're less willing to sacrifice those freedoms. When they have given a piece of themselves to help protect those freedoms, they're less willing to give those up. You know, serving in the military or in other capacities brings men and women together. All races, all socioeconomic statuses together for a common purpose, whether it's in the military or whether it's the community service. And it helps them to better understand everybody else's values, their points of views, and to work hard to preserve them. Everybody appreciates everybody else's sense of their beliefs, because they stand by them every single day, they get to know them. And I think if a lot of our folks that, we have less and less people in elected office than to serve. And I think a lot of the reasons why we have the inability to get along and to work together is because of that. That's the generation before us where they actually had that benefit. I come from a family that practiced public service. I truly wanted to make a difference in my community, my nation from a young age. I know we're UNF, and UNF President John Mulaney gave me a foot in the door many, many years ago when he was Jacksonville mayor. They were really only 2 decades ago, very, very young at the time. So, but he allowed me to work each day in my community to build a better place to live and to work and to raise a family. And I've done that. I have 5 kids, so I'm certainly raising a family. And President Bush once said that from now on, any definition of a successful life must include serving others. I think we need to remember that. I truly believe that what he said is true. I truly believe that service doesn't always have to be in the military, although I think it's very, very important. I've had the privilege to serve the leadership roles in my life through the Boy Scouts, the Character Counts, Keep Jacksonville Beautiful, through my church, nationally, the Young Republicans, and other different organizations in our community and nationally. I know that we can all make a difference no matter what obstacles we face in life, too, whatever our skill sets are. We can all make a difference through our service. Martin Luther King once stated, everybody can be great because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to
to make your subject and verb agree, which is, I'm a great point of that, example of that. You only need the heart for grace, and you need a soul generated by love to serve. Serving gives you an opportunity to do something greater than yourself. I would encourage those of you that are here to get involved in making a difference in the world around you. I'm a great football fan. Jackson is a great football city, especially now, especially after last year, we're a great football city. But the great football coach, Dick Vermeil, once said, if you don't invest very much, then defeat doesn't hurt very much. Winning's not very exciting. So when you're not putting out much of yourself, if you lose, it really doesn't matter. I hope that today's discussion that we're going to have here, that you're candid with your responses. I hope also that you remember to have empathy for others and their points of view. In today's world, we're very focused on what makes us different, sets us apart, and we actually really all want the same things out of life. So I hope that those of us there can work very hard together to help create that for the next generation. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Next, we're thrilled to have Ms. Bark, Regional Director for Senator Bill Nelson. Senator Nelson began his public service career in 1972 with his election to the Florida Legislature. He is someone who thinks public service is a noble calling, which is why he has devoted his life to serving his community, his state, and his country. Although Senator Nelson is unable to join us tonight, on his behalf, Ms. Bark, who will rejoin the federal service as the Northeast Florida Regional Director for the Senator in June 27, position she previously held for 8 years. She's based in Jacksonville, and the office covers 6,000 square miles and serves more than 2.1 million residents across 10 counties and 50 individual municipalities.
Thank you so much for having me be here. Much like Harrison, I too come from a family that has a basis in service. We're Army and Navy mixed in our family. everything from grandparents, parents, my siblings. My dad was in Korea. One of my younger sisters served in Baghdad, also in the Army. And so we have a rich history of that. And we also have a good, rich history in our family of giving back. Whether it was my family owned our own business, and I'm really proud of the fact that we donated over $1 million in services to this community, to the Northeast Florida community, in in-kind contributions that we were able to provide. And so when the opportunity was presented to me through some of my volunteer work to be able to come and work for Senator Nelson, I jumped at the chance. And it's really inspiring when you get to work for someone that has a servant's heart and really does look at public service as that noble calling. So I know Bill very much wishes that he could be here himself tonight. He was also in the Army, by the way. He was an Army captain. But I'd like to read this on his behalf. Dear friends, I wish I could be with you all in person at the National Commission on Military, National, and Public Services meeting in Jacksonville to tell you how supportive I am of the Commission's goals during these crucial times for our country. Whether freeing Europe from the tyranny of fascism, exploring the cosmos, or caring for our allies abroad, Americans have always responded to the call of service. We will not do so successfully unless our best and brightest are leading our government, military, and public service organizations. Youthful energy is needed now more than ever to fight for democracy and spread the message of liberty and equality. I commend the leadership and vision of this bipartisan commission as you work to strengthen our American democracy and remain optimistic that Americans will continue to answer our nation's call to service. Sincerely, Bill Nelson, Senator.
We are excited to have Mr. Bill Flipsick. He's Team MoveCon Jacksonville City Coordinator. Mr. Flipsick engages, trains, and communicates with volunteers in the local area and shares Team MoveCon's mission and core capabilities with local partners, agencies, and organizations. And before coming to Team MoveCon as the City Coordinator, Mr. Flipsick spent 21 years in the Navy, specializing in voyage and operation fighting within the United States Submarine Force. Mr. Flipsek enjoys engaging with his community in the aid of disaster relief and recovery and assisting veterans continuing their call to service as they transition to the civilian sector. Mr. Flipsek, thank you for coming.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you to the commissioners to come and visit and allow us to have that opportunity to come and talk and give our inputs today. It was meaningful. I enjoyed a lot of the inputs that we were able to discuss with your commission. I wanted to start out, my name is Bill Flipsek. I am a retired Navy chief, 21 years in the submarine force, and I have been at this position to Jacksonville, Florida, to enjoy the Sunshine State. Last tour was in Washington State, so we didn't really have as much sunshine up there as we do down here. Go from one extreme to another. But thank you again. What I want to do is about Team Rubicon and our continued call to service. It's that part of our mission is to unite the skills and experience of the military veterans with first responders and to rapidly deploy emergency response teams. As the disasters come about, we are there to help that recovery process, working with local emergency operations to help connect the civilians and those that have been devastated by disaster and get them the help that they need. Since our founding in 2010, we have deployed on over 250 disaster response operations around the world, serving communities in various kinds of need. We maintain a growing roster of 80,000 volunteer members. Just last year, Burma hit the state of Florida, we had an influx. 2,000 members signed up with Team Rubicon to assist their community. Not only did we have them work with us, but we had them work with other organizations because the main mission is that service to your community, be able to get them recovered and get them back on their normal life. We utilize military veterans due to their unique skill sets and then respond safely, rapidly, and effectively in that wake of disasters. We also provide our veterans with three things that they lose after leaving the military. Purpose, gained through disaster response, a community built by serving with others, and identity created by joining a new mission. A lot of times as we are veterans, we retire or we transition out, we miss that camaraderie, we miss that unity. What is it that we don't have anymore is when we have that unit, that division, whether you're on a ship, plane, helicopter, or in a unit, a battalion, you miss that camaraderie, you miss that common sense of purpose. And so with those of Team Rubicon, you have that common sense of purpose where you're going out and you're helping each other. Now, we're not just a part of a veteran, we're not just a veteran organization. We also have first responders. And as we call it, we have kick-ass civilians that are involved in Team Rubicon. And that's a big part because not everybody can join the service. Maybe they went to sign up and they found out that they had a heartburn or something that prevented it. That doesn't mean that they don't have that call to service anymore. And so now what they do is they find organizations like ourselves that can come and they can work with people with that same mindset. They want to take care of the community. They want to have that bonding and camaraderie. So while we do our business, between disaster operations, we engage our managers in training. We'll do service projects, and we'll do social events to build a stronger, more effective cadre of disaster response for people. We like to talk about blue sky training. You know, at this time where everything's kind of settled down before the season starts to hit, it's come. That's when you can connect with one another. You can connect with the training to build those skill sets, to reach out to those that maybe at that time, spur of the moment, you've got that adrenaline, I'm going to go out and help. And then maybe something happened at work and you couldn't do so. But now with things calm, we're able to connect with them and post that training and make them prepared for that next disaster that hits. We do this by, we have adopted the FEMA's National Incident Management System. So that way, as we respond to our disasters, we have that common language. As you know, if some of you were to look us up and you take some of these courses, they have their own unique acronyms. And of course, federal, military, that's what we like to do. Normal language, not so much. So with that, it's able to teach each other how to communicate and how to work. So then when we respond and we're working with that emergency operations center, we can connect with them, we know how to operate, we know how to make that fluid transition over to assisting others. And the biggest thing of all that is promoting the reintegration and the gap between military and civilian life. That has always been a stick. You see some of the news articles of veterans who lose their jobs to PTSD and make that permanent choice to something that, you know, they've been struggling with. This is where we do is we try to get them involved with other organizations such as ourselves and other communities. Because like I said, as this board is this national commission, military, national, public service. It doesn't just say you're military or you're national. The key word should be focused on is service. What is your passion? Maybe it's caring for children. Maybe it's for disasters like we do at Team Rubicon. Maybe it's the care for feeding children, so you work with another organization, the American Red Cross. But the service is where you feel your passion to help others, call that continued service. And that's the biggest thing with this, is as we transition to a new generation of veterans that have been in battle for 10 years. Now with the new come, we still have those individuals that want that call. They want to go. Myself, it was part of my healing process. You know, I have, as an assistant navigator in the submarine force, very small community and very unique skill set. And it's like, you know, hey, get out of the military, write your resume. Okay, how many know of any submarines that navigate on a commercial basis? If you do, please let me know. Mm-hmm. Other than the Columbia cartel, that was not so good. They tend to sink, and that's not good. Well, sinking in submarines are good, but coming back up was a problem. But transition that transit of operations and planning, and in that with Team Rubicon, is finding your calling, your passion, and transitioning that over. And so for me, it was help, that was part of my healing process of getting involved with an organization, because it was going to connect me to programs that help through the healing process, serve others that once I become able to support others, and it's empowered to work with other organizations like Team Rubicon. But that's the thing. We want to empower our veterans. We want to empower our community to continue that call of service. Whether we start off in earlier in schools, whether in high school when they require the community service programs, that's where you can lay that foundation of getting people into the communities, getting them involved. And just last year, just this year alone, Team Rubicon has responded to 20 disasters in 2018. This is including the flooding in Hawaii, tornadoes in North Carolina and Alabama, and our recent storms in the Northeast. And we also have volunteers have completed over 20,000 hours of disaster response training online and in person. To let you know that some of the organizations, we are here to serve the community. We are here to help those that are in need. What I would like to do then is discuss with the new part of our program is as we go into Hurricane Harvey being the new response and recovery program. Normally we were the ones that come in and then we would just help clean up, get their lives going again. But now with Team Rubicon, we are deployed over 1,800 volunteers in Texas in the ongoing relief. They cleaned up 972 homes. And right now, TR is partnering with the St. Bernard program to launch a long-term recovery pilot in support of Harvey-impacted communities. We're working to construct 100 homes in the Houston area by 2020. We recruited a cohort of Play Hunt Fellows, and it's a one-year opportunity to allow them to do community service, work with the community, and improve them. Since then, we've deployed 38 volunteers to this rebuild effort. Main goal, as I said, as organizations grow, as the needs arise, we become adaptable to the area that we're working in. And so as Team Rubicon, not only will we come in and help clean up, but we'll also come in and help you rebuild as well. Thank you.
To introduce our commissioner, Mr. Steve Barton, who will provide a brief overview of his mission. Mr. Barton served as the former general counsel to the Senate Armed Services Committee, and in that position, he was lead professional staff member responsible for defense personnel programs, including support for the active force of over 1.3 million service members. Mr. Barton also served over 22 years in the Judge Advocate General Corps of the United States Navy, leading military and civilian legal professionals and staff at sea and ashore. Mr. Barton, Commissioner Barton, it is your turn.
And thank you, Deborah. That was very kind. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's my honor to spend a few minutes with you tonight to tell you a little bit about this this commission, and who we are, and why it is that we're here, and so interested to hear from each of you in our visit to Jacksonville. We are a nation built on service. Volunteer service helped support America and its troops during the Revolutionary War. The 19th century saw the emergence of a widespread service efforts through religious groups, launching several important organizations like the YMCA, American Red Cross, and the United Way. Service is part of our American character. We might even say it is a defining quality to our collective sense of civic responsibility and engagement of what it means to be an American. That service is part of Jacksonville. The military employs over 30,000 active duty personnel and nearly 20,000 civilians in the Jacksonville area. Service means many things. For sure, it includes the work done by volunteers, but it also includes those who serve in our military, our school teachers, our government workers, and others. Service has bipartisan support, not just now, but throughout our history. We can highlight efforts by every president, every administration, every political party to support the work that everyday Americans do to further the common good. Early in the last century, President Teddy Roosevelt founded the Conservation Corps. President Hoover promoted service as a way to address poverty and other social conditions. Various national service programs helped to lead our nation out of the Great Depression in the 1930s. President Kennedy formed the Peace Corps. President Johnson, the VISTA program. President George H.W. Bush created the Points of Light Foundation to encourage volunteerism. President Clinton founded the Corporation for National and Community Service, which runs the AmeriCorps and Senior Corps programs. Following 9/11, President George W. Bush called upon all Americans to devote 2 years or 4,000 hours of volunteer service during their lifetimes. These are but a few examples. Yet never before has our country blended together military, national, and public service into a single effort. That brings me to the subject of our National Commission on Military, National, and Public Service. The commission was the idea of Senator John McCain, a Republican, and Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat. Senator McCain recently said that they created the commission to be, quote, a catalyst for an important national conversation on military and public service, end quote. It is a conversation that, again, quoting Senator McCain, comes when our nation is at a crossroads. We must decide how we want to foster a culture of service among American men and women from all walks of life. Senator Reid recently expressed similar sentiments. He said, "The importance of this commission's work and mission cannot be overstated. We, as a government, must invest in our public service." So this commission's efforts will develop effective ways to increase participation in military, national, and public service for both men and women, ultimately strengthening our communities and the nation. We're indeed at a crossroads in our nation's history. Millions of our citizens volunteer and engage in service every day. Yet there's more we can do, more ways to participate, more ways to embed service into the very fabric of our civic engagement. That's what our commission is to do. Our mandate is very broad and aspirational, but we believe it can be the foundation for a movement. We intend to listen to the public, to learn from those who do and those who do not serve, and make recommendations to foster a greater ethos of service to strengthen the American democracy. As our name suggests, the commission will focus on three broad areas of service. The first is military service. About 1.3 million Americans currently serve in the military on active duty. An additional 1 million serve on active reserves and the National Guard. Those figures represent just under 1% of the adult population. Added to this are over 18.5 million veterans, including over 1.5 million here in Florida. Florida has the third largest veteran population in the nation, behind California and Texas. Taken together, about 9% of our population over 18 has at one time or another served in the United States military. But there's a growing disconnect between the general public and our armed forces. For example, in 1995, 40% of youth aged 16 to 24 had a parent who had served in the military. In 2016, that number was down to 15%. And over the last decade, the number of youth that are eligible and considering military service has markedly decreased. Next is national service. Service in the federal, state, or local elected office of or government employment. Currently, about 2 million Americans work for the federal government. This number has been relatively consistent for the past 20 years. But the percentage of Americans who are working for the federal government has decreased dramatically since World War II, from 2.4% down to about 0.65%. More concerning is that of those 2 million who work for the federal government, only 6.2% of them are under the age of 30. In Florida, there are more than 130,000 individuals employed on the federal level. Many people also work in state and local government. In Florida, for example, there are over 260,000 individuals employed at the state and local level. Last but just important is public service. Many Americans give back to their communities through different types of volunteer and government-sponsored programs, nonprofit and faith-based programs, foundations and private companies. In fact, 63 million Americans volunteer each year, but that represents only about 25% of the adult population. Some of you may have heard of AmeriCorps, Senior Corps, and the Peace Corps. These are programs run by the federal government, and nearly 60,000 Americans are participating in these programs today. More than 12,600 of them here in Florida. In the last few slides, I discussed the decreasing or relatively low number of Americans that serve. With a population of over 325 million people, we can, and frankly, we must do better. A little more than a quarter of our population, 90 million, are 19 years of age or younger. The millennials, the Gen Xers, they represent a huge potential for our country if we can find ways to encourage a greater number of them to serve. Additionally, over 48 million people are of age 65 or older, comprising about 15% of the total population. That's a growing source of untapped potential. Today's seniors aren't retiring the same way that their ancestors did. They have a strong desire to continue to serve, to continue to add value, and there's evidence that suggests there's individual health and social benefits to staying engaged in, via service programs. That brings me back to our commission and what we're going to be doing over the next 2 years. The commission will focus on two primary areas. The first is an evaluation of the military selective service system and if there is a continued need for the program in its current form, if any changes should be made, or if it should be disestablished. The selective service system is commonly referred to as the draft, but they're actually two separate and distinct things. One is the registration of males required by law, males 18 to 25 years, in order to provide a ready pool of additional manpower to the United States Armed Forces in times of a national emergency. The other is the actual call-up, or the draft, of those within the pool. Registration is required by law, and there are penalties for failing to register. But it's also important to understand that currently there is no draft. In fact, the last military draft occurred in 1973. Congress would have to act to pass legislation authorizing a draft, and the president would have to sign it into law in order for a draft to commence. The second task of the commission will undertake is exploring ways to increase an individual's desire and interest to serve. Congress asked us to consider all forms of service, including military, national, and public service, as I previously discussed. We're particularly interested in understanding how Americans feel about service. We want to hear from people who serve. Frankly, we want to hear from people who do not serve, from people who don't want to serve, perhaps they're unable to do so, and from people who really don't see a need or have a desire to serve. The commission is made up of 11 commissioners chosen by leaders of Congress from both parties and by President Obama. They bring together diverse experiences from service in public office, the U.S. military, the federal government, and non-for-profit organizations. We are committed to a bipartisan approach to answer the essential questions on that service that the commission must address. Our chairman, Dr. Joseph Heck, is a former member of the House of Representatives and a member of the Armed Services Committee. He's also currently an active member of the United States Army Reserve. Joining the chairman and leadership of the committee are two vice chairs. Mark Guerin is the former director of the Peace Corps. He oversees our work on national and public service. Deborah Wada, who we met earlier this evening, is the former Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. She oversees our work on military service. The other commissioners are Edward Allard III, Janine Davidson, Avril Haynes, Jeanette James, Alan Casey, Thomas Kilgannon, and Sean Kelly. The commissioners are supported by a small staff located in the Washington, D.C. area. Throughout 2018 and 2019, the commission will be visiting locations across the nation for a series of events and public conversations. The goal of these visits is to listen to the American public, to ignite a conversation, and to build a national movement around service. This is a big task, and we need your help. That's why we're here today. As was mentioned earlier, you are our fourth visit to Jacksonville. We've been to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Denver, Colorado. Last week, we were in Boston, Massachusetts, and in Nashua, New Hampshire. We're also going to be making visits to Iowa, Illinois, Texas, California, and Tennessee. That's just this year. And we hope this set of trips will enable our commissioners to hear from Americans representing the rich diversity of America. As part of our work, the commission will explore a series of key questions. There we go. And these will serve as a guide for our discussion. Don't worry, those will be back. So we're encouraging the public to submit comments, thoughts, and ideas on any aspect of our commission's mission. To stay informed on the latest news from the commission via our website, www.inspiredtoserve.gov, social media channels including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at InspiredToServeUS. Also, we invite you to post photos from the day or live tweet during using the hashtag InspiredToServe. We're also continuing to encourage comments through the Federal Register. Any of the input that we receive from you will be gathered from the public via all the forums, and they'll be critical in shaping the Commission's recommendations. Our vision, we truly believe that working with all of you, we can sow the seeds of a movement that inspires more Americans to serve. This is our vision. Every American inspired and eager to serve, because we are a nation that is built on service. Thank you for joining with us tonight. At this time, I'd like to turn proceedings over to Commissioner Sean Skelly, who will open our comment and question and answer section. Ms. Skelly served as the former director of the Office of the Executive Secretariat at the United States Department of Transportation. She previously served 2.5 years as Special Assistant to the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics at the Department of Defense as Coordinator of the Department's Warfighter Senior Integration Group. Ms. Skelly served on active duty in the United States Navy for 20 years as a Naval Flight Officer, retiring with the rank of Commander, and received a Master in National Security and Strategic Studies from the United States Naval War College. Commissioner Skelly, all yours.
Thank you, Steve. As my colleague, Commissioner Barney, mentioned, now's the time. This is why we're really here, is for us to hear from you, the public. Any member of the audience is free to share their comments with us. We do ask that you limit your remarks to 2 minutes, please, to allow for as many speakers as we can fit in. Second, we ask that your comments relate to the topics of the commission. The five are up here on the screen, related to what we talked about on the sheet that's on your that was on your seat. I also have to bring to your attention, everybody on their seat should have had a comment card. If you don't care to speak, everybody is welcome to fill out comment cards and provide that to a member of our staff or one of us, somebody with one of these badges, before you leave tonight. At the same time, you're also welcome to provide any comments you want on any of these issues to our social media presence, onto our website, or to via the Federal Register. We will take all the comments that we can get. Okay. So, how we'd like to proceed is, one of our staff members will have the one microphone that will be in the audience. If you raise your hand, I'll point you out and direct our staff member to you. Then we'd like to use your 2 minutes to make your comments. Oh, sorry, are we changing the program?
I apologize. We can actually just have individuals come to the standing mic right here in the middle of the aisle.
That might have been helpful to know. So we're going to use the other model, where we're going to ask anybody that has a comment. If anyone has problems with mobility, we ask you please make it known to us, and then we'll bring you the microphone. Okay. So the comment portion of the period is now open, so anyone that would like to make a comment, please make your way to the microphone in the middle of the aisle in the back.
My name is Kat Keene. I'm here with Volunteer Florida, Florida's State Commission on Community Service, and I prepared a couple comments. Thank you to the champions of service here, the City of Jacksonville, Senator Bill Nelson's office, and Team Rubicon. Quickly, we're the lead agency for volunteerism and service in Florida, and we administer AmeriCorps funding. So do we have any AmeriCorps members here, or alums, or programs? Oh, you guys, I can't wait to hear what you say. Thank you for your service. We support about $32 million in federal, state, and local local funding to deliver high-impact service programs across Florida. And when a disaster strikes, like Hurricane Irma, we deploy to the state EOC. We manage the volunteer and call donation center. We raised millions of private donations for long-term recovery and registered tens of thousands of volunteers. And we're really excited about this national commission. To speak to the one question about, you know, how does the United States increase propensity for Americans, particularly young Americans, to serve? You know, our comments are around national. $5 million, about $350 a month that people are paying. Well, with AmeriCorps, one of the benefits is that when AmeriCorps members end their service, they get that Siegel Education Award. It can be used to pay off educational loans and future educational expenses. It's an opportunity to increase this economic benefit for all Americans. And when those young people, those 7 to 24-year-olds, the 71% of them that might not qualify for military service, we want them to serve their country domestically in AmeriCorps. So we encourage the commission to think about expanding those opportunities to serve, the Pell Grant, the Education Award. And last but not least, I'll share that, like Commissioner Barney mentioned, I think service is a broad and inspirational vision for all of us. And by using that structure of the military to integrate AmeriCorps, expanding education wards for all Americans to continue to serve. So thank you for my time.
Thank you.
I'm going to speak to one of the aspects of point four. The Commission faces conflicting views about women in the military among people who strongly support the military. One view is that keeping women, military women, from combat zones and combat assignments is job discrimination. The other view is that putting women in danger in these ways is cowardly and abusive. These views have implications for whether both men and women volunteer for the military and remain. Eight evangelical Christian denominations have studies expressing concern about sending women into danger. These denominations include about 7 to 10% of the people in the United States. I have the web addresses for these studies with me. I believe that some Jewish and Muslim groups have similar concerns. Knowing how the Commission should respond to such concerns is challenging. I see several possible responses. For example, the Defense Department could update conscientious objection policy, DODI 1300-06, to explicitly include military people who come to believe that women should not be sent into danger. War colleges could train officers to support people who chose to join the military when they were young, but who later came to question military policy about women. Providing information about these denomination studies to evangelical young women being recruited into the military and into military-supported programs like JROTC could be part of the informed consent procedure. A military support branch could be designed that allows participants to remain in the U.S. with no overseas assignments. Such alternatives have problems, but could provide creative starting points for conversation. I've done human resources projects with the military for 35 years. I'm an established scholar of international cultural diversity, and I've worked with chaplain endorsers and religious leaders about these topics. I'd be glad to assist the commission on such church and military-related topics. I have secondary concerns about consent issues involving programs designed to promote any attitude change or volunteerism among children. Deep concern about that for this commission, and I'm concerned about competition between government-endorsed and faith-based programs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, good evening. My name is Rob Hanley. I'm currently the Community Relations Coordinator at Jacksonville University. I'm also a veteran and had the tremendous benefit of the GI Bill and also the vocational rehab program to pay for my master's and a portion of my doctorate. And to piggyback on what the first speaker said, I don't know if this is economically feasible, but if there's some way, somehow, that some version of the post 9/11 GI Bill or something of that creation can be offered for service to the general population and the civilian population, I think that would be great. There's all kinds of research out there that says that for programs like the post 9/11 bill and veterans that come back to school, the investment dollar gets returned many times into the economy, and I think something like that could happen if something similar was offered to the rest of the civilian members of our nation. I hope it can be done. I don't know if it can be economically, but I hope it can, because I think it could be a tremendous benefit. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Udell Myers. I am a Marine veteran of Vietnam. I've been serving for 31 years, volunteering to help chaplains around the world. I'm presently at Pensacola Naval Air Station doing the same. I have researched from the beginning, starting with President Carter in 1980, suggesting, along with reinstating the draft, which was accomplished at that time in terms of it being available, to also have women be required to register. Congress said no because women are not called to combat, so that got into motion, and today they are. So now we have this equal playing field. And again, there are those, as Congressman Rangel, who in 2003 proposed that women and men, both at 18 to 26, register for the draft. That took fire in the last 3 months of President Obama's administration, with Senator McCain's urging, formed this commission. Now, its agenda is very obvious to me. With all the smoke and mirrors and all the rest that's out there, the ultimate goal is to have our women at 18 register and be subject to being called into the draft. You can gloss it, you can put the bait on the hook any way you want, but it's very obvious to me, including the appointees for this commission. I want you to know that, as this gentleman said in a very mild and mannered way, this Marine is telling you that I think you have underestimated very strongly that there are many out there who have already expressed themselves in conservative and Christian values that we will not tolerate this. I encourage you to not just put on this facade. When we have less than 60 people here, you had about that many in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and this is supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, for the people. I can do the math. 540 people are going to be the voice. I know what's going to happen. You're going to say, this is the will of the people. We have taken this consensus. I'm not buying that. I will expose that all along the way. I have been following this from its conception. I will follow it to the end, and I will tell you, you will hear from me again if that is your end game for your agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else?
My name is Goodyear, Charles Goodyear. For the past 11 years, I've served as a member of the local Selective Service Board. I can tell you, in our training, what it is about is looking at people who has to be recognized as a conscientious objector, people who do not want to serve. And all the training is set up in such a way as to divert these people either to alternative service or to grant them their wish to be a conscientious objector. On a personal basis, I'm against war. I've never hit anybody in my life. I've been knocked down several times in fights that I didn't start, and I stopped some fights because I stood on my feet and faced them. But that's a different thing. On a personal basis, I am against anyone serving in combat who doesn't want to be there. As a former Army private, etc. I served when I was 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, and I know that if you don't want to be there, you might endanger your own life or the life of others you're serving with. On the other hand, I served with some women in the Army who literally picked me up and threw me against the wall because they were bigger and stronger and a heck of a lot meaner than I was. Now, if a woman wants to serve in combat, as they do in Israel, I'm in favor of it because I know that they would be much meaner than most of the men. We want to get the damn war over with because war is stupid. It is a breakdown of our humanity. We should never be at war, period.
Thank you. I can't help but speak to that. You have the freedom of speech because we have fought and laid down our lives and shed our blood that you have that freedom, sir. I would encourage you, if you're going to proceed with this and you're talking about volunteerism and using words like inspire, require is anathema to inspire. If you want to inspire, inspire, but don't have that subtle hidden agenda to require. And that's where it's going.
Does anyone else wish to make a comment?
My name is Pierre Travis. I am currently an AmeriCorps VISTA member here in Jacksonville at the ARC of Jacksonville. And I've also served in New Mexico with State AmeriCorps. I feel like national service is an excellent opportunity. I feel like it isn't well known enough among young people. The benefits that you receive for national service are fantastic, from the education award to non-competitive eligibility for federal jobs. There are some universities that are even doubling the education award that AmeriCorps members receive, and with Peace Corps, there are universities that are offering specific scholarships and grants for those returned volunteers, and I think that it would be really amazing if more universities could continue to increase that that benefit, and not only that they do it, but it be more well-known among young people, because I think it really is, you know, with the cost of education these days, it's becoming more and more difficult for young people to get a good quality education, and it's one of the great benefits for those who either aren't able to or who don't have the desire to serve in the military. It's a good opportunity to continue that service.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anyone else wish to make a comment?
These are just some random thoughts. I got drafted during the Vietnam era. I just finished X-ray school, and they sent me to Denver, Utah, which was fantastic. It gave me experience that I had not experienced in a hospital where I trained. And I also met people who enjoyed the service. One thing came to mind was this AmeriCorps, or this one individual who was becoming a doctor. The government paid for his education, but in that, to become a doctor, he had to serve 20 years in the military. And in the summertime, he was in the reserves. So it was a win-win situation. That would be fantastic for people who wanted an education. The other thing was, now that when I went in, I only got $90 a month. The benefits nowadays that these people who are in the military, just because you're in the military, quote-unquote, doesn't mean everybody's carrying a gun. I mean, we just had a family member, an acquaintance who just finished, graduated, became a Marine. And she's going to be in the supply and distribution aspect of the Marine. Her dad was talking about, even though she's in the Marine, the financial benefits just blew me away what she's getting, you know. And I also have a family member. And I went to college on GI Bill after I got out. I appreciate and thank you for the government and all that. But I think the military, just because it's, it doesn't mean you're carrying a gun and you're not in combat. That's it.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else like to make a comment, please? Excuse us for a moment, the gentleman changes the battery.
I just want to speak to national service, and I'm Charlotte Temple. I'm with the ARC Jacksonville, and we're a nonprofit agency that serves adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And we've had the unique opportunity and distinct pleasure to bring in both VISTA and State AmeriCorps. And it has just been a phenomenal experience. A lot of agencies such as I, like a lot of other things that were mentioned here today, have an aging administration population. And until we brought in AmeriCorps projects to our agency, it was a challenge to say, who's going to raise up and go into this field of nonprofits for the future? And who's going to bring in new, interesting ideas and change the face of the way that services have been provided for 50 plus years? Well, I've got news for you. AmeriCorps did that. We started bringing in 18 to 23 to 24 year olds, and it has changed the face of our agency. But not only that, it brought in young adults who were sometimes struggling on how are we going to fund our college education? How are we going to determine what we want to do in life, or had aspirations in lots of different fields, who came in and spent a year with us and have decided to go into special education as teachers, have decided to go into nonprofit entities and work and service in another way as they move forward with their lives and education. It has really been a boon to us. But not only that, we gave the opportunity for individuals with intellectual and developmental differences to serve alongside in an integrated environment. And we saw a 90-something percent employment rate for those young adults with intellectual and developmental differences that had served with our other AmeriCorps individuals. And, you know, that is astounding, because it's probably a 33% employment rate for individuals with disabilities in the United States. For individuals with intellectual and developmental differences, they're seeing about a 17% employment rate leaving our high schools here in Florida. And so to say that you can make that kind of difference, it's amazing. But they've also gone in to work with a population of individuals with intellectual and developmental differences that sometimes are not necessarily neglected. But when you look at people trying to move a population out of poverty, this is a population that is not always on the top part of the radar screen. But we've been able to be very successful in helping them live more self-determined lives, to enter into employment, and to live in independent living. And it's just been astounding for us. It's our VISTA program has improved our agency's capacity to serve in the community and to further our mission. But not only that, the other part with the AmeriCorps program State AmeriCorps program that's gone in and worked one-on-one and individually with the population have really improved the lives of those individuals just beyond our expectations. And if that could be moved across the United States and other places, the long-term impact on this population that really has been kind of like the last people to move forward would be astounding. But I appreciate your time. I appreciate what you're trying to do. And it's just one other little comment. I will say that most of the people that come to us, not always, they have to speak to themselves, have been involved in some kind of service. They've been involved in church mission projects as young adults coming up. They've been involved in things like the studies or volunteer requirements in some of the high school programs they've been involved in. But they've come up with kind of a thing of a thought process of being a part and giving back to the community in some way. And so they move into AmeriCorps a lot of times as this is a way of giving back, but also gaining something. They're gaining experience in a field, sometimes of their degree that they're seeking. I mean, we have marketing, we have development, we have lots of different aspects that they can get involved with, not just the population that we serve, but it has been a win-win for people, and we appreciate that opportunity.
Thank you. Would anyone else care to make a comment?
Hi everyone. I am a lowly high school guidance counselor. And I am the one who is trying to direct students into volunteerism. Not because you get the Bright Futures Scholarship or because you get a medal at the end of graduation, but it is, and I'm going to piggyback on what you're saying, it is such an opportunity for students who are 14 to 18 to understand and experience something different, something outside of their comfort zone. And so with that, what you think is your passion and you become involved in it, let's say you're going to become the next internal medicine doctor, and so you go and you work in the hospital, and the minute you see blood, you faint. And so you have to move on now to your next passion. And so volunteerism is just, or stewardship, or whatever we want to call it, is so important for the development of 14 to 18 year olds. I think if you can connect in any way with high schools, school boards, schools that are charter schools or private schools, any way that you can do that and offer different experiences for students, I think that you might be able to pick up a few more volunteers.
Thank you. Does anyone else care to make a public comment on the microphone?
I'll do one. My name is Howard Stevens. I'm a part of the selective board here in Jacksonville area. I'm also a member of fraternity Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated. We do mentorship here in the Jacksonville area for anywhere from second graders all the way up to seniors in high schools. So one of the things that you guys can kind of help with the military around here and different volunteer groups is come out and help with these mentoring, getting these kids while they're younger. That's some of the things that we do, starting with second graders, teaching them different things, how to be men, how to introduce themselves, how to deal with conflict, simple things of grooming and all of those things, to kind of help with these inner city kids that they see the volunteer, but they see it at a different level. So that's one of the things I would suggest in piggybacking off where I say, get these young kids, get them young, and so they can see how volunteer and how the community works.
Thank you, sir. Microphone's open. Did anyone else wish to make a public comment on the microphone? Okay. Then we're going to get set to wrap up then. Before we do, earlier this evening we heard from and we introduced Michelle Barth from Senator Nelson's office. We also have with us from Senator Rubio's office, Ashley Cook. And from Congressman Lawson's office, we also have Courtney Wesby and Terry Avalez. Thank you all for being here. So thank you all very much for coming and sharing your thoughts with us. I would encourage you again, we have the Federal Register, we have our website, with our social media sites there. Feel free to use those. You can use the comment cards, or you can provide a comment to any member of the commissioner staff. We have these badges on. Standing up in the back is Ms. Annie Rohrer, who will collect cards on the way out. Thank you all very much for attending and providing us your thoughts tonight. Please drive safely on your way home.